is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
We're building something that helps kids in sports. So, you know, I think that's an important part. If your business is about, you know, has a good mission or has some, you know, social impact or helps kids, I think it's much easier to find investors, find customers, you know, find people to support what you're doing.
Ian Goldberg is a sports dad, coach, and the founder of iSport 360, a youth sports tech platform. 13,000 coaches, kids, and parents use his platform to set goals, share player feedback, and track player progress. Ian also writes an informative and frequently funny youth sports newsletter that has 75,000 subscribers. His thought leadership has earned him a place on the National Alliance for Youth Sports National Advisory Council. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to the show. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoopheads Pod so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to tell a friend or colleague in the basketball community to give us a listen. Get ready to enjoy this episode of the Hoopheads Podcast with Ian Goldberg, the co-founder and CEO of iSport 360.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome from iSport 360, Ian Goldberg. Ian, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Mike. Great to be with you.
Absolutely. Just so our audience out there is aware, Ian and I met up at the Junior NBA Leadership Conference in Chicago, sat down at a meal together and got to talking. And we realized that we had a lot of the same feelings about the youth sports and specifically youth basketball landscape. So we thought it'd be great to have Ian come on and talk about the things that he's doing with iSport 360 and also hash out some youth sports topics. So Ian, I want to start out by asking you sort of the genesis of how you came up with iSport 360. Maybe give us a quick overview of what it is before we dive into it a little deeper a little bit later on, but just how it came to be and what your vision was for what you have going there.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you so much for having me on the show with you. So I'm a New Jersey sports dad. I also coach my two young daughters in soccer and basketball. And living in the suburbs around New York City, I started coaching and I quickly realized people take their kids' sports very seriously, have a lot of passion and energy about it, but there's usually a real disconnect between coaches and the team parents. And in my case, I knew all the parents from my neighborhood. Most of them were friends of mine, but still when it's all about their kids, those relationships become very fragile. And so I did some research and I looked into the world of education because I'm kind of surrounded by educators. And I looked at the relationship between teachers and parents and kids and how that has evolved over the last many years and kind of the best practices in terms of communication that they use in schools and the way they track kids' progress and ensure kids' success. And I realized a lot of that was not being done in youth sports. And therefore, when you know coaches and parents weren't on the same page, kids don't have fun, they get frustrated, they get stressed. And I really wanted to help that problem so we can make it a great experience for our kids.
Okay, so you come up with the thought that we need to do a better job of creating communication. So talk to me about what your initial thoughts were or how you started to get your ideas, your thoughts out to people to sort of see what that landscape looked like so that you could start to make a change in what you were seeing as a dad who was also a coach and was attending games. Talk to me about how you kind of started to put your vision in place.
Yep. So what I noticed very quickly was that there were some really good tools in the marketplace for physically getting coaches and parents to be in the right place, the same place at the same time. Like Team Snap is an app for scheduling in youth sports. There's a bunch of other like team management apps that I noticed were doing a good job of like organizing the team and, you know, giving you administration tools to communicate with the team. But what I really found was missing as I looked at many different new apps in the youth sport marketplace was something that really focused on helping kids be successful when their coaches and parents are on the same page. So we started to evolve this idea of a company and a product where the product would first set goals for the kids at the beginning of the season based on their age, their gender, their sport. And that not only helps kids, have an objective for the season, but it also helps parents understand what their kids should be doing. And it helps the coach communicate to the team what coach will be looking for. So first we set goals. Then I looked at tryouts and any player evaluations that were out in the marketplace. And tryouts are a terror. Everybody hates that time of the year because there's no perfect system for evaluating players. And I felt like if we could create some sort of tool that helps compare the kids to these goals that we set at the beginning of the season, tracks their progress, lets coach share feedback with them over time, that would really help get parents on the same page and let kids know how they're doing. So that was those were kind of the features that we saw as important and that nobody else seemed to be focusing on in the marketplace.
Yeah, I think you make a couple of great points there that I want to just piggyback off of. One being that, especially I think at the youth sport level, you have very, very little communication between the coach and the parent. And a lot of times, to be honest, even between the coach and the player about what the expectations are, where the player is in terms of meeting those expectations, what might be the difference between a player who is a starter in terms of their skill and a player who is a bench player at their skill. And so I think the more that we can communicate, and you mentioned off the top that, you know, you looked at how parents and teachers communicate, and Jason and I are both teachers for our day jobs when we're not podcasting. And so I think it goes without saying that when there is more communication about the child's progress and that communication is proactive as opposed to reactive, you tend to get much better results between a parent and a teacher, or between, if we're talking about sports, between a parent and a coach. It's oftentimes when things go unsaid or suddenly at the end of the grading period, or right before a game when your child doesn't start, or at the end of the grading period and suddenly there's a D on that report card and you haven't heard anything from the teacher, or suddenly your child that was starting is no longer starting and there's no communication. That's when you tend to have problems and issues. So I love the fact that you're attacking a problem that is clearly out there in the marketplace. And then the other thing that I really like, and I've just kind of started to fool around with what you're doing with your app, because as I told you before we opened up the podcast, this is my first week of basketball camp that I run here in Cleveland. And so I've really never done a formal evaluation, just because the paper pencil tool has always felt pretty onerous to me. And so I've gone in and looked at what you've done. And I think the thing that I love is the standards that are correlated to the child's age and the child's playing ability. And when you can look at those and say, okay, in ball handling or in teamwork, these are the things that I, as the coach, am looking for. And then I can evaluate the player on those particular standards. It makes it super simple for me to be able to go in and create that evaluation, versus if I'm just handed a piece of paper, it says, rate this player's ball handling. I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to be looking for. Or if, example, as a camp director, if I give that to one of my coaches who's worked with the kid all week and I just say, hey, evaluate their ball handling, I'm probably going to get some generic couple of terms that are going to be thrown out on every kid's evaluation. Whereas this gives me a clear cut way to evaluate. So from what I've seen, and I'm planning to use it here this week with my first week's camp, I think it's going to be a really good tool to be able to give kids the kind of feedback that's going to be meaningful to them, as opposed to just something that you hand them a piece of paper and it goes in a drawer and they never really look at it.
Yeah, I think meaningful is important. I think actionable is important. And also, one of the key words we always talk about with player evaluations is consistency. So those standards allow many different coaches in your camp to evaluate, let's say it's boys basketball, they're 12-year-old boys, using that standard you can evaluate every single 12-year-old boy in the same way, rather than having different coaches have in their mind, you know, what they interpret to be good ball handling skills. So we take that subjectivity out, and then you have very consistent evaluations across coaches, across players, you know, across ages.
Yeah, I think that's tremendous. So I know you do it not only with basketball, obviously, but you do with other sports. So can you talk a little bit about where the standards that you've created, where you've pulled those from, how you've put those together so people have an understanding of when they go on and they look at the app, they have an idea of where those standards are coming from and why they're relevant as an evaluation tool, whether it's for a coach who's using the evaluation tool or whether it's for a parent who sees that evaluation come home with their child.
Yes, I'm glad you asked that, because I think if I just pulled together a bunch of quote unquote basketball experts to create those standards, there would be no kind of validation or no proof that they're right or that they would work. So for each of our 8 sports that we have live, and it's all the big team sports like baseball, basketball, soccer, cheerleading, hockey, lacrosse, and a few others, we first started with the coaching manual from the national governing body. So USA Basketball, like all the other governing bodies, has, you know, like 100-page coaching manual. And in there, I mean, there's a lot of good information, which pretty much nobody reads, but there's good information in there about what skills are important at different ages and how to create drills around those skills, which is terrific. I then brought together experts in each sport, 2, 3, 4 people who played at a very high level or coached at a very high level, but definitely people who had an academic understanding of the game. And we looked at those skills that USA Basketball says are most important. So there's technical skills like dribbling, like rebounding, like defense. There's tactical skills like court vision and awareness and positioning. There's physical skills like speed and agility. And then there's life skills like coachability and teamwork and level of effort. So we looked at those skills that USA Basketball said were important. And then we did something that no one has done before. And that is we defined those skills for every age level and for both genders. And we defined them differently for travel players versus like house recreation players. And that way there could be no uncertainty. If you were evaluating that 12-year-old boy in basketball, in ball handling or dribbling skills, there is an exact definition that probably says something along the lines of like, you know, player uses dominant hand and weak hand when appropriate to move laterally forward and back to beat a defender most of the time, something like that. So we defined the skills to that level of detail and that level of objectivity. So everyone is evaluating the player based on that level of detail.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the things that I really like about it is I can look at it and I can clearly tell, yes, the kid can do this. Yes, the kid cannot do that. And then I can put my rating on it. And everybody, like you said, no matter what coach it is, they're all looking at the same skill. It's not that one person thinks, oh, this kid should be able to do this, and the other coach thinks, well, he should be able to do that, and varying, looking at varying levels of ability. Instead, everybody's looking at that same skill. And I will say one of the things that captured my attention that you said was the USA Basketball standards are 100 pages, and they are. And to go through that, which I've done, but not many people, coaches or otherwise, are going to take the time to go through that entire document and pull out the things that you guys have done and then make it such a simple tool to be able to use. And I think that's something that, again, it's invaluable. I'm a huge proponent of the USA Basketball standards, and I think that they're right on point with what you would want any kid to do as a youth coach. But I think if you hand that 100-page manual to the average, whether it's recreational basketball coach, whether it's even a travel coach or an AAU coach, you're not going to get very many people reading through that entire document and going over it so carefully and pulling out the things they probably should pull out. So for you guys to be able to do that is tremendously valuable, because now you've condensed it down to a more usable format that both coaches, players, and parents can all understand. So tell us a little bit about how long that process took to kind of go through the document with USA Basketball and sort of cull it down to what you ended up with for the app.
So let me just back up to say that USA Basketball did not work with me on this. We actually just...
Correct. Understood.
Right. And actually, let's be real specific, Mike. If someone from USA Basketball is listening, I hope they will call me and say, thank you so much for taking our 100-page manual and making it like in a workable format that people can actually use on their phone, on their iPad. So it certainly took a while to skim through the USA Basketball coaching guidelines. And then when we were doing the first sport, which was soccer, it took us literally like 3 months to get the experts together and get everyone to agree on how to define these skills. But I mean, one of the things that we've started to do very well is we can turn this process around in like 3 or 4 weeks. So we're actually going to start to launch some new sports coming up soon. And we'd like to get, I mean, we have 8 sports live. We'll add volleyball in the next couple of weeks. I'd really like to get on some of the, individual sports soon, like tennis and golf, and swimming and, you know, gymnastics, now that we're starting to be able to do this quickly. So within 3-4 weeks, we can get a new sport live.
So that allows you to, again, like as you're saying, to be able to add the different sports and do it relatively quickly once you've kind of established your process for how you go through and do those things. Talk a little bit about how, what kind of feedback you've gotten and how the app is being used by people out there who come to you. What kind of feedback are you getting from people in terms of how they're using it and where the biggest uses are right now?
Yep, absolutely. So let's start with a word that you mentioned earlier on, like being proactive versus reactive. And one of the first bits of resistance I usually get when I'm making a presentation to coaches or administrators of a basketball program is, you know, we don't have time to spend on a new app. And my answer to that is, if you give some proactive feedback to the kids and the parents and let them know periodically how they're doing, you will save so much time versus being reactive when that parent is already furious that their kid's not getting enough playing time or didn't make the travel team. So we wanted to make it very easy for coaches to share feedback in a proactive way, in a simple way that doesn't take a lot of time. So, I mean, that's kind of the nature of how this is being used. Soccer and basketball are our two biggest sports. In the last 6 weeks, we've spent a lot of time doing customer research, actually doing focus groups, calling customers and just saying to them, hey, we're about to make a lot of upgrades to the product. What would you like to see? So we get a lot of good feedback, and I'll give you some examples. So we have these player evaluations that are based on the standards in our system. We have some coaches who are starting to ask to customize those standards across their club, kind of like customize the platform for their club. We're working on that. We have right now, kids do not have their own accounts. It's actually coaches and the parents have to share the feedback with the kids. We got a lot of people who said to us they'd like their kids to have their own account. The parents want to see all of the feedback from coach, but they want the kid to be able to receive it directly. So in the next few weeks, we will actually have kids joining this platform, which will be very exciting. And then the third thing, which we got a lot of feedback on, is coaches were sharing feedback after the game with the kids saying, you know, here's a skill you need to work on. You need to work on your positioning. But then I had some coaches actually giving homework assignments after a practice to reinforce what they worked on at practice and help the parents understand what the kids are working on right now. And so we're adding a new feature that lets coaches share practice assignments after practice. So we definitely are very active about getting feedback from our customers and building it into the product.
So that homework piece, would that be just a written instruction like, okay, tonight we worked on such and such shooting drill. I want you to do this version of that at home. Is it mostly verbal text? Is there any thought to maybe eventually adding video to the platform where people could assign a drill to a kid and they could go and watch the video of that drill? Any thought in that direction?
Without a doubt, that will be coming in the near future. It's probably one of the biggest requests we get is for some video capabilities. For now, I've seen coaches send home text assignments like work on these skills. I've actually seen coaches who, with some of the younger kids, they'll do like a fill in the blank. So they'll send something home to the kid with a few scenarios, and the kids actually have to fill in the blank as to where they should be standing on the field or who should be covering. So, you know, coaches are getting creative, and I love that. So we're going to make it easier for them to do those things.
I like that. I like that a lot. I can see, we all know that we are living in a visual society with, you know, the amount of time that all of us kids especially are spending on their phones, and being able to pull something up quickly from their coach, I'm sure would be tremendously valuable when it's that direct communication of, hey, do this, and then here's the video of what that should look like. Can you walk us through a couple different scenarios so that people out there who might be listening have an idea of what the process would look from their end as a user? So let's say I'm the coach of a travel basketball team, and I want to put my team on the iSport 360 platform. Describe for me what the process is for me to get this set up, and then what I can do with it for my team.
Absolutely. So thanks for asking that. So the first thing I would do as a coach, let's say it's the beginning of the basketball season, I would actually send a note to my team saying, you know, of course, coaches usually introduce themselves and they run through some housekeeping things. We'll have practice on these days and games on these days. I would also suggest to a coach, like, let your team, parents, and kids know that you're going to be trying out this new platform to help share feedback and do player evaluations and make sure the kids have a successful season. So that way the parents know, like, what the heck this thing is when they get the invite for iSport 360. Then it takes between 3 and 5 minutes to set the team roster up. All we ask for is the child's first and last name, and then at least one parent or guardian email address. We do not ask for a lot of personal information at all. So once you have the roster set up, you can, by the way, you can type that in manually, or if you use Team Snap, you can import that roster very easily from your Team Snap account. So we'll be doing more partnerships like that with other big team management platforms. Once you're done with that, so that took maybe 5 minutes, your roster is all set up, an invite automatically goes to all of those parent email addresses that welcomes them to iSport 360. It lets them know that Coach Mike is going to be sharing feedback throughout the season on this platform, and it tells them it's a free account for them to set up. So they do that. The next thing that happens is the app actually provides the standards or the goals for the season. And that's based on when the coach set up the team, the coach would have been asked the sport, the age, the gender of the kids, and whether it's a travel team or a recreation team. So that allows us to provide these 10 well-defined goals that coach can print out and bring to the first practice. Coach can download it. Coach can just share it on the platform with the parents and kids. And then from there, that's when kind of the fun stuff starts. So typically coaches will start sharing feedback after practice, literally take 2 to 3 minutes after practice to just blast a few little bits of feedback to a couple of kids, or maybe it's to the whole team, whatever is appropriate, maybe share an assignment after the practice. It really literally takes under 3 minutes to do that. Then periodically, coach can do a player evaluation, which is, that's more like a report card. I don't see that happening more than a couple of times per season. And then the really fun part of our platform is that we know sports parents have so much passion and energy and excitement for their kids' sports. So to harness that energy, we have parents sharing stickers and emojis and praise with any of the kids on the team. So the stickers and emojis are all positive. They're thumbs up and fist bumps and muscle flexes and MVP trophies. So kids can accumulate those stickers over the course of the season.
That's very cool that parents can give those not only to their own child, but to other kids on the team, because we all know that as youth parents ourselves, and having sat at enough youth games over the course of my parenting life and otherwise as a coach, we know that oftentimes youth parents are focused on their own individual child and oftentimes not focused on what the rest of the team is doing. Unless the rest of the team is doing something bad, then they're very focused on and they're very focused on the rest of the team. But if the rest of the team is doing something good, they tend not to notice that in a lot of cases. So I think that's really terrific that you guys have put that in there, that if I'm a parent, I can go on and I remember a great play that my next door neighbor Johnny made in the game. I can give him a, you know, give him a smiley face, as opposed to just, you know, watching my own child. It kind of spreads the focus, maybe a little bit wider lens for parents to look through.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes coaches don't even catch every great play that's being made. Like, you know, in basketball, off the ball, there could be a great pick. There could be a great defensive play, a great assist. Like sometimes those things don't get kids recognition, but I'm sure there's a parent on the side of the court who saw that, and, you know, let them send a little sticker reward to the kid who made the great play.
Absolutely. So now let's look at it from, we looked at it there from the coach's perspective. So I'm a parent, and my kid is on a team that has a roster on the app, and I'm starting to get these things, you know, these reports and this information from my team's coach. For you, what would you say to parents whose children are on the platform in terms of how should they be looking at that feedback and using it to help both their own experience as a youth sports parent, and how they can then take that information and help their child to have a better experience? Maybe just share what your thoughts are on the, how parents should view what's coming to them.
Yep. So first let's start by saying today, like I mentioned, on the app, kids don't have their own accounts. So if any feedback comes from the coach, it goes to the parent, and it's the parent's job to share it with the kids. I've never loved that model, and that's why in the next few weeks we will let kids set up their own accounts. We got so much feedback that parents wanted their kids to have their own accounts. So what we had to do was balance our desire for kids to be involved in the process and be self-aware and be empowered to like be in charge of their own development. We had to balance that with the laws about child privacy. So and it's a delicate balance. So we wanted to make sure that we covered all of the bases. And when we launch this in the next few weeks, we will. So for example, when coach shares feedback with a player, the player will be able to view that feedback and even communicate with the coach directly, but the parent will be copied on every one of those communications. So nothing will be able to be communicated without the parent's eyes being on it. And then we're actually going to let kids chat with their teammates on this platform, because we want to build that camaraderie and we want them to, support each other through the victories and through the defeats. But parents will be able to see all of those communications as well. So it's a pretty safe place, and it's a place where kids can start to receive this feedback and start to really take control of their own development. Even at 8, 9, 10 years old, I mean, they can start receiving feedback and acting upon that.
Head Start Basketball is proud to announce that we will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. The first Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, in partnership with the Jay Billis Skills Camp. The camp will be designed for boys rising to grades 7 through 9 and will take place August 2nd through the 4th. Prime Skills Camps will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Pace and physicality of drills and other programming will be adapted to suit a younger player, but an emphasis on improving your individual skills in the context of a team environment will continue to be the hallmark of Prime Skills Camps. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbillescamp.com for more information or to get registered.
It's very interesting that I look at my generation, and I'm 49 years old, and think about just the way that I might communicate or might have communicated with teammates when I was younger, whether I was a youth player or a high school player or a college player, and the fact that these digital platforms have popped up to allow teammates to communicate in a totally different way that might seem foreign to me or other parents, that we're going to communicate via a digital medium as opposed to
carrier pigeon.
Carrier pigeon, Jason says. I don't know if I'm not I'm not sure if I'm that old, but again, I think it's something that sometimes as a parent, we don't often think of that as being something that would be necessary or something that would be attractive. But for kids, we all know that it is, that it's something that they want. It's something that they do all the time. It's something that comes completely natural to them. And so it makes complete sense to me to allow the kids to be able to interact and do those things on your platform. Makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. So do you have teenagers, by the way?
So I have a 9th grade daughter. I have a 7th grade son, and I have a daughter who just finished 3rd. So
great.
So I have 2 teenagers.
Yeah. So right around the same age as mine. And the funny thing is, for the last 6 months, we've been considering what features to put on the platform for these kids. And I will tell you, I had a lot of smart people working on this project. What we thought kids wanted was completely wrong. And we did focus groups with like 10, 12, 14-year-olds, and they told us exactly what they want. And I'll give you one example, which it doesn't seem that obvious, but think about all the social media platforms out there. If kids want to have a group chat, a group text with their teammates, if they want to go on house party, on FaceTime with their teammates, they have to create a group. There's no platform out there that exists that already has their team as a unit that connects the whole team together. But on our platform, we already connect them. They're already connected. We will already have, you know, messaging capabilities for them and chat capabilities. And they don't need to go set this whole thing up. It's already set up. So like game ends, we're at the beginning of a season, the game ends, they can go right on the platform and message or support or share praise with any of their teammates without having to start like a whole group chat with those people.
So do you have your kids on the payroll for all these great ideas they're giving you?
I hope they'll benefit from this someday.
That's awesome. I think it makes total sense that you're going to the people who are going to be the users of the app. I mean, kids are going to use it. Coaches are going to use it. Parents are going to use it. So obviously it makes sense to go to those people and say, how do you want to use it? What are the things that you want to see that are going to make it better, that are going to make it a more useful tool? Because ultimately that's what you want to create, is something that, not just something that looks cool, but you want to create something that people are actually going to utilize. To go back to the very beginning of our conversation, which is the whole genesis of this, was how can I positively impact youth sports? And in order to make that happen, you obviously have to create a product that people are going to want to use. And by allowing kids to have feedback and thoughts and input into the process, that is going to allow you to create the best possible product that you can. I want to circle back and ask you a question that's more not technically related to the product itself, but just your process from how you went from being the sports dad who was thinking about how can I make a positive impact and change some of the things maybe that I see to how do you go to create your company that ultimately creates the app. So can you talk a little bit about the process from when you first maybe started thinking about the idea to when it became a full-fledged business and kind of a little bit of what that process looked like? Because I think that's something that, you know, there's a lot of coaches and parents out there that are entrepreneurs or have an idea, and maybe they're just not sure of, you know, how do I get my idea to reality? And so maybe if you talk a little bit about that process, we'll help to educate some people on what that looked like for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, this was 2016 when I was sort of conceptualizing this company. And, you know, I had a full-time job and I was thinking, you know, I think there's a business opportunity here. So I was very aggressive about seeking out input before I took any leaps of faith. So I talked to coaches, I talked to parents, I talked to everyone in my community. Then I went to business people to think about, hear what they thought about this idea. I went to potential investors. I asked a lot of people. And what I noticed was two things. Number one, there really was nothing like this out on the market. And number two, in 2016, there was a tremendous amount of investment going into youth sports technology. In that year, Sports Illustrated started buying up youth sports apps. NBC Sports started buying up sports apps. Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys and Dick's Sporting Goods were rolling up sports apps. So I was like, wow. I mean, the timing of this is pretty crazy. I think I'm going to try to pursue this. But, you know, like any entrepreneur, there are risks associated with the potential benefits. And I took some big risks and risks that I probably never thought that I would take from a financial and career standpoint. And we'll see how it turns out, by the way, because this story is in its early stages. But, you know, from that point, building technology is also a risky process. You need the right people. You need to spend your money wisely, unless you're independently wealthy and you could make lots of mistakes and still continue to be in business. But, you know, you build a prototype, you show it around to people and you say, you know, if they're potential customers, what do you think of this prototype? Do you think this would be valuable? Would you pay for something like this? And then you do that about 20 more times. You improve your prototype and then you take it back to potential customers and then you improve it and you go through that again until you reach the point where we're at, which is like 2.5 years later, where we're about to really start charging customers for this. We've been giving it away a lot up until this point, but now we're going to start charging customers to use this product.
How did you build your team of people around you? Because obviously you're not an expert in every single area of your business. So how did you find the right people to help you to grow and build your company?
Well, you know what? There are literally millions of people with good ideas out there. But if you do not have, someone or some people with good business experience and smarts, you're in trouble. If you want to build software and you don't have a tech person, like a developer or a programmer, you're in trouble. If you have all of those things and you don't have a good board of advisors guiding you and helping you navigate the difficult road of entrepreneurship and launching a tech startup, you're in trouble. So if you don't have some people who are willing to put some money behind this thing, some good, smart, strategic investors, you're going to be in trouble. So, you know, you have to cover all those bases. And that's why, you know, when it comes to tech startups, something like 90% of them fail. And you could see why, because there's just so many bumps in the road. That being said, I have tremendous admiration for people who are willing to take a risk for something that they really believe in, for something that can help, you know, a good cause and help kids. So that being said, I do want to add one thing about the ethics in youth sports today. This industry is exploding in terms of spending. And I really did not want to be, I didn't want to be part of that. I did not want to be someone who is promising you your kid's going to get a scholarship for college And if you pay me, you know, $500, we'll make highlight reels and we'll get them a scholarship. We'll connect them to recruiters. I didn't want to be part of that money machine. So I wanted to build something that was going to be extremely affordable. And for us, affordable means like $10 per month for the whole team, $10 total, you know, which winds up being like, you know, a dollar per kid or less per month. So, you know, that's kind of the evolution of the business.
Yeah, I think that that's something that you make a great point there about the youth sports business. And there are obviously a ton of great people in youth sports that are doing fantastic things. And then there's also, unfortunately, people that maybe are not doing that with the best interest of kids at heart. And that's where you want to decide at some point kind of where you stand on that, you know, on that fence, which side of the fence are you on? And yep. And I think you have to ultimately take that stand and figure out why you're doing what it is that you're doing. And so in the course of your process of putting together the company, was there one thing that was surprisingly easy or surprisingly hard through the process that maybe you didn't anticipate when you first got started?
The surprisingly hard part is that, especially today where every single company essentially is a technology company or has technology at its core, I spent about 6 months thinking, I have great business experience. I went for my MBA. I know smart people. I can get this company off the ground. And without a technical co-founder or a CTO or someone who speaks the language of technology, I was literally chasing my tail for 6 months. And I would go to these meetups here in the New York City area that are supposed to be entrepreneurs and founders and you know, developers and investors, like the whole startup community. I would go there and there would be 200 people. 195 of them would be people like me, like business people with a good idea. And then 5 of them would be developers. And there was a line out the door waiting to meet the 5 developers there. So I would say that was definitely the hardest part. And that continues to be the case. I mean, everyone with a good idea is looking for the right person to help them truly build the product or the service or the company from the tech side. What was the easy part? I would say being in the business of helping kids succeed in youth sports has been great because it really gets me in the door with people who would be typically difficult to get in with. So Positive Coaching Alliance, you know, after my company was in existence for like a year and I reached out to Positive Coaching Alliance and I told them, hey, we're just like you. Like, we're helping kids have a better sports experience. We're actually getting their parents and coaches on the same page. And we're putting some technology behind it. And we got a great reception. And now we have a nice relationship with Positive Coaching Alliance. And, you know, same thing for the Junior NBA and National Alliance for Youth Sports. So they've all been so receptive because we're building something that helps kids in sports. So, you know, I think that's an important part. If your business is about, you know, has a good mission or has some, you know, social impact or helps kids, I think it's much easier to find investors, find customers, you know, find people to support what you're doing.
Yeah. To go back to what we said a minute ago, you're on the correct side of the fence and that enables you to partner with organizations that have a similar mission that have maybe been around for longer than you, and you can benefit from that association. And I will say that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be involved with Positive Coaching Alliance and went through their training to give workshops and haven't been able to give as many, unfortunately, as I would like, just because of my own schedule and how busy I've been and everything else. But I'm a big believer in their mission and what they're trying to do. And so I feel fortunate to be associated with them. And I can certainly understand the benefit that it has to be associated with a national organization that has the mission that PCA does, without question. All right, I want to shift gears, but before we do, I want to give you a chance. If there's anything else about the app itself or the user experience that you want to share before we move on to some common youth sports issues that you see in your experience as a youth sports dad and as the founder of iSport 360. Is there anything else you want to share about your product, whether it's something new that's coming out or whatever? Just share anything that we haven't talked about or discussed so that people out there know exactly what it is that you're getting.
Well, I'll give you a great alley-oop pass here, which will help us transition into some youth sports issues. The best way to connect with us is to visit our website at www.isport360.com. And there's two things I would strongly encourage you to do there. One is you can demo our product. You could demo a player evaluation right there. But the other thing is I would definitely encourage you to sign up for our free newsletter. So we actually have 75,000 coaches and parents subscribe to our newsletter. I call it a support group for coaches and parents because we share a lot of humor. We share a lot of information and education. We talk a lot about how we can, you know, control our emotions on the sidelines, but we do it with a lot of humor and humility. We talk about some of the mistakes that we've made as sports parents on the sideline or as coaches. We get professional athletes to write articles and psychologists and educators. So please try out the product. You could demo it for free and check out our newsletter. It comes out every 2 weeks and you could sign up. And that way we can keep in touch with, you know, anyone who signs up for that.
All right. So let's jump right into that and throw out at us, Ian, a topic or two that you think you see people discussing that are current issues in youth sports. And let's talk back and forth on an issue.
Sure. So let's talk about probably one of the biggest ones at the Junior NBA Summit. And I hear it from every, you know, national governing body across every sport. And that's, what is the role of the sport parent? So we talk about this all the time. We analyze sports parents, but everyone is trying to figure out how involved should sports parents be? You know, how much should they be talking on behalf of their kids? How much should they be communicating with the coaches? How do we manage their sideline behavior? Because quite frankly, it is legendary for how disruptive it could be. So where would you like to begin, Mike?
All right, let me throw this one at you. And I think this is a common one that anybody who has a child who plays sports or has been to a youth sporting event can relate to this. How do we talk to people about their coaching from the stand? So if I'm a parent and my kid is playing the game and they already have a coach down on the sideline and now I'm dad or I'm mom and I'm in the stands and I'm yelling out to my child instructions about where they should be on the court or on the field or what they should be doing. Obviously in basketball, the most common thing that they all yell is
shoot.
Where obviously we know that I'm sure that that's not the same instruction that the coach would like to share with the player at that particular moment in all cases. So just talk a little bit about your perspective of the impact that coaching from the stands can have on a youth player, again, in any sport. Obviously we're specifically focused here on basketball, but just the general impact that that has on a child who's trying to play a sport when their mom and dad are yelling things from the stands.
Absolutely. So let me start by saying almost all of my perspective here is driven by a psychologist on our advisory board who has done all the research and shares it with me. So, you know, like we're pretty well versed in this and we write about it all the time. One of our recent articles was called "The Most Dangerous Word in Youth Sports is Shoot." And the reason we talked about that was because I was at my 9-year-old daughter's basketball game and everyone in the stands was yelling shoot, shoot, shoot the whole time. And I have to admit that the biggest culprits were my wife, my parents, you know, the grandparents, all the people sitting very close to me. And I said, I'm going to write an article about you if you do not stop, because shoot is, it's actually a command that parents are yelling to the kid at a time when the kids should be making their own decision, whether it's a good time to shoot, or maybe it's a good time to pass, or maybe there's too many defenders on them. They shouldn't be shooting. So, you know, that's a great example of when coaching from the stands is not a good idea. So, you know, the word shoot is something we write about all the time. But the other thing we talk about is just the overall psyche of the sports parent. So they're all nice people. They're all warm and friendly, and there are friends in the neighborhood. But when some of those parents get to the court, they turn into different people. And they typically start by cheering for their kid, for the team, very positive, but it's a very slippery slope. And we talk about this all the time. And by the way, there's a lot of physiology and psychology associated with this process. As that parent starts to have elevated respiration, heart rate, lower oxygen levels, as their stress hormones like cortisol start to rise, they switch from being this positive force in the stands to being the coach. And that's when they start by saying, well, it starts with simple, you know, go, 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 or shoot, shoot. And then it turns into get back on defense, hands up, you know, all that stuff. That's distracting. It's not helpful to the kids. I could share many pieces of research that tell how much kids hate that. So, you know, to keep this short, we can make it an hour long conversation about this topic, but to keep it short, there's so many reasons it's not a good idea. And kids have told their own firsthand stories of how much it bothers them. So, please, parents in the stands, let the kids decide when it's time to shoot, let them make their own mistakes, let them learn from it. And then not in the car ride home, but sometime later in the day, or maybe even the next day, talk to them about how you think they could be doing better, but let them kind of make the decisions themselves.
Yeah, I think what you just said right there is the decision-making process has to go to the kid. And if you want a kid to get better at a dynamic sport like basketball or soccer, as two examples, if I'm the parent and I'm constantly yelling to my kid what to do, now, first of all, I know that I'm sure you have research that a lot of times the kid's not hearing it or can't process it fast enough to even react to what the parent is saying to begin with. But let's say that the kid is reacting to that to some degree. You're robbing them of the opportunity to learn how to play the sport and make their own decision. I think that's something that, and I'd be curious to get your opinion on this, as a coach of a dynamic sport, again, thinking soccer or basketball, you know, there's a lot of thought out there that the best way to coach those decision-making sports is that you do your coaching in practice and you teach decision-making and you let kids make those decisions. Then afterward, you ask them to analyze those decisions by coaching using questions and short little instructional bursts. And then when it comes time for the game, you let those kids make the decisions based on what you've taught them in practice, as opposed to the micromanaging coach who is just constantly yelling and saying where to go and where the ball should be and what position you should be in. So can you talk a little bit about that? And maybe, I don't know if you have any research-based information on just the coaching style in a decision-making sport and how that can impact the child's experience.
Yes. Yeah, so to your first point, I agree. I think that there is an age at which the kids should not be hearing the coach yelling from the sideline anymore. And I don't have research on exactly where that age is, but I think it's a progression, right? Like when the kids are eight, you have to be vocal from the sidelines because they're out of position a lot. And it's kind of torture to watch a game silently at that age. But certainly as they progress to 10 and to 12, I feel like the coaches should be heard a lot less during the game, to the point where they shouldn't be heard at all. Now, this is really hard for parents, right? Because let's say I keep using the age of 12, but for us, 12 is like 12 years old is right in the middle of our wheelhouse. And I think 12 is an age when coaches should probably not be yelling out onto the court too much during the game. But you have 12 parents or 12 sets of parents in some cases on the other sideline, and they're watching their individual kid make mistakes, and they want to know why coach is not correcting their kid. So now you have pressure on you as the coach to make the decision. Do I Do I speak out or don't I? I always fall on the side of letting kids make their own mistakes, talk to them after the game. And actually what that does when the coach is a little bit more on the quiet side, what that does is it encourages the parents to do the same thing. And there's this great PCA video campaign called I Dare You to Chill. And it basically, it's actually a very funny video.
Yeah, I've seen that. Everyone, it's great.
You've seen it. It's great. So it encourages the parents, like, just when you think you should be yelling out at your kid, do some yoga, do some meditation, like do some up dogs and down dogs. And, it, you know, I feel like a coach that kind of keeps it quiet during the game is going to be able to encourage the parents to do the same thing. So I think that's the kind of environment you want your kids to learn in.
There's no question that the coach sets the tone for the parental behavior. And I think that happens in a couple of ways. One, I think when parents see a coach who is calm and not arguing with official or screaming at kids, that has a trickle-down effect on parents. And they see that, oh, our coach is behaving this way. Maybe we should fall in line and behave that way. And that's not to say there obviously aren't outliers that have a calm, collected coach, and you still have the wild, outbursting parent in the stands. But I think for the most part, those calm coaches tend to create a calm environment for their parents in the stands. And I think the next step with that is, especially if you're in a travel situation or a club situation where that coach may continue up the ladder with those same group of kids, I think those calm, collected coaches tend to attract parents who behave in that same way because they believe in the method and the style of that particular coach. So I think there's a trickle-down effect. I want to ask your opinion on this, or maybe allow you to give some advice to coaches. If I'm a coach of a team and I want to make sure that the behavior of my parents in the stands is in line with what I believe is the best environment for my kids and how I'm going to create that environment, how would a coach go about addressing with parents behavior in the stands and what a coach's expectations are? Because I don't think that's something that a lot of coaches do, but I do think it's probably something that would be beneficial and would make a difference or make an impact. So how would you, what advice would you give a coach for how to, again, proactively discuss parent behavior in the stands and parent coaching from the stands?
Well, I think you have to start the season by letting parents know that as the coach, you're not opposing them. You're not on the other side of the fence. You're actually an advocate for the parents, and you want to help them enjoy this experience as much as you want the kids to enjoy the experience. The funny thing for me personally, when I'm at the fields and I do a lot of coaching in my neighborhood, a lot of people in my community know that I write this newsletter, and for that reason, I need to model great behavior. But also everyone on the fields when I'm around knows that they need to be on their best behavior because I'll call them out on it. And, right. And I mean, I would never put someone's name in print, but I do openly talk to the parents. Like, for example, there's two moms on two of my daughter's soccer teams that come to mind that are the most vocal. They will actually yell things out at the referee inappropriately. They don't think before they yell out, but when they're away from the fields, they're friends of mine. They're lovely, lovely people. But I talk openly with them like, hey, listen, we are all hyped up at the field. We are all jacked up. We all want to yell at the ref when they make a bad call. But you know what? I dare you to sit on the sideline for one complete half and just try to enjoy your coffee and not say anything. Can you do that? And like, we laugh about this. I call it the butt in chair challenge, but like, I really challenge them to that. And then we talk openly about like our emotions and our feelings, because let's be fair to coaches. Like, we get jacked up on the sidelines too, but we need to maintain our composure. So I think just being open with the parents and letting them know, you know, I'm the coach, but I'm a sports parent too. There are games when I'm sitting on the sidelines as a sports parent, And, you know, we all should just enjoy this, because when it comes down to it, it's just about our kids having a good time and having us enjoy being spectators. So talking openly, talking about these physiological things that actually make you act crazy on the sidelines, all that stuff is important.
Yeah, a lot of times I think just making parents aware, sometimes you get in those situations and people just escalate and they're maybe not even conscious of what they're doing or how they're being perceived or how it looks, because they get so caught up in the moment. The other thing I thought that was very telling that you said was, I dare you to just have your coffee and make it a fun experience for you as the parent. And I can't remember where I read it now. I wish I could attribute it to a particular source, but the gist of the quote or the paragraph that I read was basically, if you are a parent and you are going to your child's games and you are screaming at officials, criticizing the coach, agonizing over every mistake your child makes, criticizing other players on the team because they're playing ahead of your child or the mistakes that they're making, or they won't pass the ball to your kid, and you're spending 2 hours watching that youth sporting event and you're miserable, why are you doing it? Like, the experience of watching your child play should be fun. It should be enjoyable. And when you behave in such a way that all those physiological reactions that you described are happening to you, I don't think anybody walks away from experiencing that and says, wow, that was really fun to go and watch my child play basketball or watch them play soccer when my blood pressure rose and I was, you know, angry and the people around me were staring at me and people started moving away from me because I'm because I'm yelling. And that just doesn't seem to me like it would be a fun and enjoyable experience. And the point that this author was making was, why would you want to do that rather than just go and have an enjoyable experience that is going to be pleasurable for you or enjoyable, as opposed to this, you know, getting yourself all worked up and upset whenever you watch your child play. And I think if we could really get people to consciously think about it, I think we'd get much better results from our parenting experiences up in the stands.
I think that's true. And just to go back to something you talked about earlier, like the generation gap, I think, you know, I'm around the same age as you. And when we were kids, you know, your parents wanted you to go play football in the mud and get your face buried in the mud.
Right.
They didn't find stress in that. They actually found pleasure in that. Whereas today, and I'm as guilty as any other parent, you know, when you're at the field or you're at the court and you see your kid get beat or knocked down, or you see your kid get fouled and the teenage ref didn't call the foul, you get furious. And that's just who we are as a generation of parents. And I just would love to help sports parents get that under control so we can get back to being like, yeah, my kid got beat, my daughter got knocked down, but you know, as long as she's not like wounded out there, she's going to get back up and she's going to maybe handle that situation differently next time. So could be a learning experience.
For sure. All right. I want to jump to a different topic. And this is one that I think a lot of parents struggle with. And that is, a parent has an idea of an expectation for their child in a particular sport, whatever it may be. And that parent has to decide, how much am I going to push/force my child to practice that sport in order to achieve success that maybe the child isn't as interested in, but the parent is very interested in it. And that's one of the things that at various points in my life that I've struggled with as someone who's a basketball parent and whose kids like basketball but don't love basketball. I sometimes find it difficult to toe that line between providing them opportunities and forcing them to go do something that maybe they wouldn't do on their own. Different from me when I was a kid, where any opportunity I had to go and play or practice, I was usually taking advantage of that opportunity, whereas my own kids sometimes don't do that. And I think that's something, having been a coach for a long time at the youth level and then having gone through this experience with my own kids and talking to other parents through that experience. I think it's something that a lot of parents, especially fathers, struggle with, is how much do I push my child versus how much do I kind of let them seek their, what they're going to be interested in and the level of commitment that they want to have. So do you have any thoughts on that or things that you can share maybe with parents that are in that situation?
Almost everything I'm going to say right now, Mike, is going to be counterintuitive to what sports parents typically think and do. And I'll give you an example. I encourage my both of my daughter's soccer teams. They play in the spring. They play in the fall. I always make them take the winter off. I insist. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how much training you might want or think you need. I want you to take a season off. I want you to go in the wintertime, go play basketball, go take a swim class, do something else. This is counterintuitive because almost every one of the parents on my daughter's soccer teams says to me, coach, do you mind if I get my daughter some, you know, private training during the off season? And I say, yeah, give them a break. Don't give them extra training. You're going to burn them out. Right. So we don't want to get into playing the same sport basically 10 or 12 months a year. So that's a little counterintuitive. The other challenge is that you probably talk about this too on your podcast, but the fear of missing out.
Absolutely.
Like when parents hear that, I'll give you a great example. So my daughter was 6 years old and there were tryouts for the U7 soccer team in our neighborhood. And I said to my wife, there's no way I'm having my daughter go play on a travel team with time commitment and like 10 times the cost of our local recreation soccer program and, you know, the pressure and everything. And so at first we were both okay with that. But then all of my daughter's friends started to try out and all the moms and mostly the moms would say to my wife, why isn't your daughter trying out? So in the end, we caved into the fear of missing out because God forbid she didn't play on the U7 travel soccer team. Like her career could have ended.
Career could have been over. That was the college scholarship just flew out the window, Ian.
Right, exactly. So fear of missing out is a really powerful force. And then the last point I will make is that I don't care if your child is the best player on their team, even if they're one of the best players in the league that they're playing in, we need to recognize the fact that 1 in 1,000 kids gets a sports scholarship to college, yet 1 in 2 parents thinks that their kid has scholarship potential. I quote that from John O'Sullivan's book, Changing the Game. Awesome book, if anybody wants a quick read. So that statistic should really drive home how much money you're going to put towards your kid's sports career, how much training. And I'll just give you one last rule of thumb in my house that we use. Whenever there's the urge to get my kids some extra training, our rule is if our daughters do not go on the driveway and practice basketball in their spare time, we are not going to pay to have them go get extra training. So we need to see that initiative first. And sometimes that's hard because you feel like your kid, she just really needs a little training, a little guidance. But if I don't see initiative first, then no matter how much we spend on training, how much time, it's not going to be impactful.
That's fantastic. I think that's the best advice that any youth parent could receive, which is if it's not child-driven, then it's probably the wrong decision. And that goes for the team that you play on. And obviously there's some education involved here of the kid knowing what their available options are. But if the kid is not pushing for more basketball or more soccer or more lacrosse themselves, if they're not picking up their ball and going out on the driveway or going out in the backyard and kicking the ball around or shooting baskets or whipping the ball around with the lacrosse stick, chances are that extra training that you're going to pay a lot of money for, or that club team that's going to practice 3 times a week and play on the weekend, you're going to ultimately end up with a child who doesn't like the sport by the time they're 12, 13, 14 years old and they get to high school and they're not going to even end up playing a sport that you invested lots of time and money and effort with some end goal in mind. And I think it's important to keep in mind that youth sports for kids, and we already talked about it for parents, is supposed to be, it's ultimately supposed to be fun. And I think when you start putting kids in positions where they're doing things that they wouldn't do on your own, where, as you said, they're not taking the initiative to go out and pick up their ball without mom or dad saying, hey, it's time to go out and pick up your ball. If that doesn't exist, then all these other things that we all do, and that fear of missing out because they're not training or they're not playing on a select club elite team, yep, that when they miss out on those things, we feel like, oh, they're not going to get what they need. And ultimately, maybe what they need isn't more soccer. Maybe it's just to go out in the backyard and run around, or maybe it's go on a hike, or maybe it's just eat dinner with your family once in a while. And yeah, I think sometimes we lose sight of ultimately what we're trying to accomplish. And I think that statistic that you quoted from John O'Sullivan's book is a tremendous one for parents out there to keep in mind. If you could just post that on your mirror, and every time you thought about what you were going to do with your child in terms of youth sports, you just read that statistic, I think we'd all probably look at things and what we do and the choices we make in a little bit of a different light.
Yep, absolutely, Mike.
All right, so I want to wrap up with two things. One, I want to give you one more chance to share. Let's go over one more topic of your choosing, something that you're passionate about when it comes to youth sports. We'll toss that back and forth, and then we'll circle back and let you share out again your contact information, how people can reach out to you, where people can find the app, what they can do with it, and we'll wrap up there. But let's talk about one more topic, something that you're passionate about when it comes to youth sports.
Yeah, one thing, and you know, I know that you and Jason are educators, so one of the topics that we talk a lot about is bringing best practices from the classroom to the ball fields. And whether, the youth sports has grown so fast in our country and so much that there are a lot of well-intentioned volunteer coaches out there, but very few of them have any training in education. None of them many of them don't understand best practices in education. They don't understand how kids learn. They don't understand that children have different learning styles and how to work with kids with disabilities or challenges. So for coaches and parents out there, I want you to think about how your teachers and parents and kids work together in school, and really try to do your best to incorporate that into your youth sports experience. The easiest thing to do from the coach's standpoint, and certainly for the parents too, is sharing feedback. We know in school, kids learn based on ongoing feedback. They don't learn when they get a report card at the end of the semester. So this feedback is so important. And for coaches who are kind of strapped for time and they don't have time to stand for an hour after every game and talk to every parent about their kids' progress, I would encourage you to find a way to share feedback when you can. Take a couple of minutes after every game. And if it's with iSport 360, that's great. If it's not, and you just decide to send an email or some text messages, it is such an important part of the game. It's so important for the kids. So feedback is an important best practice. And the other thing is, coaches and teachers and parents have conferences and back to school nights. And that's very important to build that relationship. And same thing with coaches and parents. I would just encourage you to build a strong relationship. I'm not saying that parents should be making all the coaching decisions. I'm just saying coaches and parents should build a strong relationship so they can talk openly about the child's progress. Sometimes parents want to share with the coach if their children have challenges or disabilities. That helps the coach do a better job. So I would just encourage parents and coaches to think about these best practices from education, and let's bring them to the ball field and to the basketball courts. And you probably have some good perspective on that too, Mike. Yeah, and Jason.
It's great advice. I think in any walk of life, and certainly it's true in teaching, probably more so than anywhere else. And obviously Jason and I are most experienced in that particular field, but I think proactive communication really ends up solving a lot of potential problems, where if there is an issue with a particular student, if I've communicated with that parent and I've built a relationship with them and I have interacted with them in a positive way in regards to their child, then when it comes time for me to have a more difficult conversation about something academically or behaviorally that the child needs to do better, that parent is much more likely to be receptive to what I have to say if I've built a relationship and communicated with them before that problem or that issue arises. It just makes everything flow so much better. And I think that oftentimes we don't translate that to the court or to the field. And as coaches, yeah, we have our preseason coaches meeting and we talk about expectations for our players and parents. And then typically we don't speak to parents again until there's a problem. And we may not, if there isn't a problem, we may not speak to the parent again at all, other than just a hello or a wave. And we don't necessarily give that parent feedback on how their child's doing in terms of their skill development and their, again, going back to all the things that you said that are part of the iSport 360 app, whether it's tactical skills or the life skills that are, you know, so critical that we all want our kids to learn from sports. So I think there's no doubt that in any walk of life, if you've communicated and you've put that emotional investment in the bank before things happen, then when it's time to make a withdrawal there, you're going to be much more likely to get a positive result. And I think that goes for teaching. I think that goes for coaching. And I think if you're a parent out there or you're a coach or you have a business, I think that that covers every walk of life. I think you're much more likely to have success if you're communicating and developing relationships and developing camaraderie before problems arise. It becomes much easier to solve a problem with somebody that you have a great rapport with, as opposed to somebody who you've never talked to and now all of a sudden you got to go to them with problems. That's when issues become a lot more difficult to deal with.
To piggyback off that, there was an incident two seasons ago when I coached them. I make it a point after every game to try and talk to any parent that came, especially if it's an away game, because I think it's important for them to understand that it's I coach middle school basketball, so I feel it's important for them to understand, like, the kids really enjoy having their parents there to support them. But the other coach that I coach with doesn't necessarily do that, and they no longer coach. But they didn't make that connection, and when that situation arose that there was a problem, it was way more awkward for that coach to deal with it because they didn't foster that relationship. And I think that also, like to Mike's point, I'm a teacher, and I've done that with all my – I try to do that with as many parents as I can, and the other coach wasn't educator full-time, so it was kind of an issue that kind of arose. And like you said, and like Mike said, being educators, we're kind of given an advantage at this point because we know how to handle the communication piece a little bit better than just volunteer coaches and parents.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. I think that's a good way to wrap up the content portion of the podcast. I want to go back, Ian, and give you a chance to let people know how they can find the app, how they can find out more about what you're doing, and then share out some contact information if people want to reach out to you or reach out to your company and get more information about all the great things that you guys have going. And then we'll wrap things up after that.
Yep. Great. So thank you again for having me on the show with you guys. To find our product, you can check us out in the App Store. The app is called iSport 360. You can visit our website, iSport360.com, where you can demo the product. You can also sign up for our biweekly newsletter, which is free. The app is not going to be free any longer, but you do get a 21-day trial. So if you have a summer season coming up, if you have some summer camps, if you're preparing for your fall season, would love you to give it a try. You get 21 days free. And then after that, it's only $10 per month for the team in total. So it really comes out to, you know, less than a dollar per player per month. So thanks so much for having me, guys. And I hope everyone will give the app a try.
Absolutely. Ian, we can't thank you enough for spending an hour and 15 minutes with us on the show and sharing the great things that you're doing with iSport 360. I would highly encourage people to go out and give it a look. And check things out. I think it's something that coaches will find valuable, and then in turn, players and parents will find to be valuable as well. So to everyone out there, we appreciate you listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.